My name's Matt. I have the privilege of being a minister here in Maybridge. If we've not met, let me add welcome to you as well. So as Josh said on that lovely video, we are in a little six-week series called Healthy Household, which is just a chance to dig in to some of the practicalities of following Jesus as a church family. And I want to begin today, though, by getting you doing a little bit of talking again. So with the person next to you, that's a completely different slide to what I was expecting. Have we got a question slide here, Josh? There we go. So with the person next to you, when was the last time you felt genuinely rested? A few murmurs of noise could be a controversial question. So just for the person next to you, when was the last time you felt genuinely rested? Okay, let's reconvene. Out of interest, how many people said that they felt rested sometime recently? Like four of you. Well done. Who for it was a little while? Who can't remember the last time they felt rested? Few parents putting their hands up there, looking a bit dreary. Anyway, we live in a time, do we not, where we are constantly told to do more. To be our greatest, to strive to hit the finish line, whatever that is, the day you die, the day you retire, paying off your mortgage. I have no idea what we're rushing for, but apparently we need to work all the time to get more money, to be more comfortable, to prove ourselves to be capable, to live a worthwhile life and to, along the way, benefit the economy or something, apparently. The thing that nobody talks about in the middle of all this is rest. We have loads of technology that was designed to make our lives easier. People said that with more technology, the work week would cut down. They actually said that. But the average work week is now longer, and we now have devices that mean you can be contacted 24/7. You can work anytime, anywhere. Isn't that great? I don't think it is. In the Bible, there's this word Shabbat. We translate that as Sabbath. Shabbat is often thought of as the day of rest. It's ceasing from work. It's a big deal. Anybody else excited about the idea of Shabbat? Those of you who've not rested for a while, that should be you. It should be an easy sell to talk about this. A day of rest, a day of desisting from work. And the story of Shabbat begins at the start of the Old Testament in the book of Genesis. And you might know that Genesis begins with the creation of the world, and there's loads of debates about how literal or poetic it is. And that's really interesting, but that's not for today. Today we're talking about rest. And you see, in Genesis 1, it tells a story of God making the world over 6 days. But then as chapter 2 begins, something unusual happens, which is that God has a rest. It says this: "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." This is remarkable. Other ancient worldviews do not do this. The way that God is spoken of in the Bible, he doesn't need a rest. He's not a bit done in by creating the universe from nothing. He doesn't need a nap because he's finished positioning the tectonic plates. God is switched on absolutely 100% of the time, every single moment. And yet he stops. He ceases working. He doesn't become less powerful or less creative. He just stops, enjoys what he's done. It uses this word holy, which is a bit jargony, but basically it means set apart. The seventh day is set apart by God. In the next Old Testament book, Exodus, the Sabbath appears again. This is a long time later, but it's still important to God. And this time it's him speaking to the people of Israel. He's chosen them to deal with, to work with. And he says this to them. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you should not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy again. Anybody know which famous passage that's from? The Sabbath is one of the Ten Commandments. The famous commandments. Everybody thinks the Ten Commandments is about not lying and stealing. Those are the ones everyone remembers. And they're in there. But God places a huge emphasis on this Sabbath idea. It makes it into the top 10. In fact, it is by far the longest command. God takes the time to be clear about it. It's also the only command that refers right back to creation. If God has said, take a day's holiday every week and it's baked in, why wouldn't you do it? There's that word holy again. We might think of holy as things that we have to do it in the name of purity in some way. But holiness is about specialness. The Sabbath is the special day in the week. It's the climax. It's the best bit. It's not just the sort of leftover piece at the end. But look at how all-encompassing it is. God basically says, I don't want you to work. I don't want your kids to work. I don't want your employees to work. I don't want people from other countries in your town to work. Heck, I don't even want your animals to work. If anybody in this room makes their pets work on Sabbath, stop it. It's in the Bible. Take that hamster out of his wheel. Give him a little break. But seriously, do you see that the idea, even a lot of the language continues, and the idea is because God rested on that seventh day, you could too. You should too. He makes the pattern we follow. So this wonderful rhythm of 6 days on and then a day off is an incredibly old gift from God. He looked at us and said, you need a day off, you humans. You can't work 7 days a week. It's not a good idea. Now, as with many things, over the years that followed these things in the Old Testament, the Jewish religious leaders were really keen to make sure everybody kept the Sabbath, and they put some extra guidelines and restrictions in place so that it was done properly, at least how they thought it should be done. And by the time of Jesus, the Sabbath was tied up with all sorts of extra legislation. There were laws and sub-laws and sub-sub-laws and extra clauses. And the religious leaders would get very upset if they felt that anybody was ignoring the Sabbath laws. Because for them, if you were to, ignore the Sabbath, you were committing blasphemy, you were betraying the faith. And to this day, certain religious Jewish people are very focused on getting the Sabbath right, and they will do anything to avoid working on the Sabbath. And work can be just about anything. Here are some examples. In some circles, they rip their toilet paper into individual pieces before sunset so they don't have to do the work of tearing it up on the Sabbath if they need to use it. If you go to a religious area in Tel Aviv to this day and enter a block of flats, the elevators will be set up so they go up and down all day, stopping at every floor on the Sabbath. Why? So that nobody has to do the work of pressing the button to call for the elevator. But my favourite thing is this. It's considered work to write anything down on the Sabbath, which means there have been huge debates about whether it's okay to play the game of Scrabble. And it was ultimately decided it was okay to play Scrabble on the Sabbath if you use a board which has raised edges between the letters, because if the letters are kept apart, it's not technically writing. That is how seriously religious Jewish people take the Sabbath. With all that in mind, let's have a look at this story in Mark's Gospel, account of Jesus' life. This is in chapter 2. It's a Sabbath story. It says, one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisee said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? He answered, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. So picture the scene. Jesus and his disciples, that's his little immediate gang of followers, are having a nice day off. They're having a walk in the countryside, great Sabbath activity, and then the disciples pick some heads of grain. Can you feel the dramatic tension in that moment? You shouldn't, because picking a grain is not a big deal. It's not dramatic. Anyway, that's what happens. They're hungry, so they have a snack. Sadly, there is not a Pret a Manger in the first century Galilean countryside, so the grain will do. All going well so far. Then it escalates quite quickly. The Pharisees notice. Now, if you don't know about the Pharisees, they're a particular group of very serious Jewish religious leaders. It's the equivalent of a bunch of church leaders, basically. And they say to Jesus, oi, why are your guys doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Now, there's two issues with that question. Firstly, it wasn't unlawful to pick grain on the Sabbath. There's nothing in the Bible that says that. It was unlawful according to the extra laws they'd added on top to make sure people did it properly, but it wasn't in the Bible. But secondly, what on earth are the Pharisees doing there in the first place? It's the Sabbath. At this moment, Jesus is not doing any public teaching. He's not healing anyone. He's not gathering crowds and claiming to be God or anything else they don't like. He's walking through the countryside with his friends on a day off. So the Pharisees are spending their day off following other people to make sure that those people use their day off properly. They're policing other people's rest. Now that seems to me to be a bit much. It's a bit like, you know, if you went for a nice walk on the downs one bright Saturday afternoon and you turn round and there was me with a clipboard checking that you're not doing any work. I can promise you that will never happen. That will never happen. But what an irony. How are they observing the Sabbath themselves if this is what they do with their Sabbath? They've completely missed the point. How does Jesus respond? He doesn't get bogged down into a debate about the technical laws that they've added. He goes straight to the Old Testament because he knows that's the right ground there, you know, that's the where to discuss things with these people. And he pulls out this fairly obscure story. Now, the Jewish people, he knows, absolutely love David. He was their king 1,000 years before. You probably know him from the story of his fight with Goliath. That's pretty famous. He's their hero. So no one's going to criticize David. They respect him too much. And Jesus recalls a time that David was on the run from some of his enemies and he went into the temple and he ate some bread that was set aside for worship, a bit like communion bread, basically. And normally only the priests were allowed to eat this bread, but David and his friends are in desperate need, so they eat it. And Jesus uses this obscure example to say, look, okay, we've got our rituals, we've got our procedures, but human need comes above those things. And it's not directly a Sabbath example, but it illustrates Jesus' point. All these rituals and procedures in life, they've got their place. But they're not meant to control us. They're not meant to take priority over humanity. They're supposed to serve and help us. And that's the same as how we're supposed to see the Sabbath. Because it's then that Jesus says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It might seem like common sense to us, but this was a revolutionary idea. Here's the thing. A lot of people with good intentions, both then and still now, have said lots of things about God. And a lot of what people say about God often comes down to one idea, that he wants things from us, that we have to produce and perform and get it right and live well. And that's basically where the religious teachers of Israel had ended up. And in their way of thinking, that the way of thinking for most religious people, it's as if we were made for the rules. Like the rules take priority over everything else. And it's that sort of view of God that puts people off considering Christianity, which is understandable, but it's a huge shame because it's actually the opposite of what it is. You see, right here, Jesus says, no, this Sabbath thing is not a stick to beat you with. It's a freedom to be enjoyed. It's not that you were made for the Sabbath. It's like you've got to jump through the hoop. It was made for you. The Sabbath was invented for you. And that's because the God that Jesus talks about is interested in our thriving, not just in our performing. We can throw ourselves into enjoying a Sabbath without worrying about getting it wrong. It's a gift and a great one. It's at the end that Jesus says this amazing line, the line that would make them really take notice. In fact, a line so provocative, it's part of the thing that ends up having them kill Jesus. He says, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And in this little sentence, he's saying three massive things. Firstly, he's saying, I'm the Messiah. The Son of Man was a strange Old Testament title for the Messiah, the hero the nation expects, and Jesus is using it about himself. All these Jewish leaders are getting stressed about keeping the Sabbath right, and Jesus says, hey, it's me. You didn't get the Sabbath right, but I'm here. I'm the one it's actually about. Secondly, in this, he says, I'm the Lord. A different claim, a bigger one. But this is Jesus saying, I'm not just the one sent by God to sort out the world. I am that, but also I'm the very God that patterned 6 days of work and one of rest in the first place in Genesis. I'm him. And in particular, he says he's Lord of the Sabbath. He applies it in particular to the Sabbath. If Jesus is the Messiah and he's the Lord, he is over and above the Sabbath. Remember this, the context of this. He's defending his followers from criticism. He's saying, I'm the one who originated the Sabbath. It's my thing. If I say it's okay for my people to treat the Sabbath as a freedom to be enjoyed, then that's how it is. And so he blows away all this criticism about eating grain and all this. He's the one who decided the Sabbath, defines the Sabbath, and defends the Sabbath. And the implications of this are enormous when it comes to Sabbathing or rest generally. Jesus gives us the freedom to stop. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. It's not about Sabbathing to earn something with God, but to rest because you and I need it. Have you ever owned this? Are you someone who lets yourself rest in the way that God intended? You know, the Bible is not super prescriptive about how we use the Sabbath. It doesn't say loads about what we have to do. But two themes come up, focusing on God in various ways and resting from work. The writer Lynn Barb puts it really well. She says, whatever we choose to do for Sabbath needs to give us rest and life over time. The challenge is discernment, experimenting to find what works for us and the people we love, and what helps us catch our breath and remember who we are as God's beloved. In Jewish thinking, Sabbath is basically dinner time on Friday until dinner time on Saturday. Doesn't have to be that way for each of us. And it's worth noting, the Sabbath concept existed before the 40-hour work week that we tend to have in our culture. Some of us do paid work and some of us don't at this point in our lives. But it's important to get hold of this. When the Bible talks about Sabbath, it doesn't only mean a rest from paid work. It means a rest from all the work we have to steward. So for example, I am paid by this church to work 5 days a week. I know you think I only work on Sundays, but I actually do 5 days. And I use a sixth day to do the other work that I have to do, shopping, cleaning, life admin, and so on. And after that, I have a seventh day, which is a Sabbath. But a good Sabbath will vary depending on your personality and your circumstances, because while you might love to unwind with a bubble bath and some Michael Bublé, that would be torture for me. But I found for myself, there are broad things that I think might apply to a lot of us. So for me, some signs of a bad Sabbath for me, which sounds like a rock band, doesn't it? Bad Sabbath. But a bad one for me would be things like this. Checking my work email. I'd need to not do that on a Sabbath. It might be too much of a good thing, like watching too much TV. It might be not having any exercise. It might be not having family time properly. It might not be not having time on my own. It might be not having really prepared for it, like things like tidying the house and shopping and so on. It might just be that I give no attention to God. The signs of a good Sabbath would be more the opposite. It would be fresh air, exercise, family time, bit of alone time, doing some reading, feeling unhurried, bit of time praying or reading the Bible. It might include a good film. It might be listening to some music or a podcast about something unrelated to my job. It might be a meal with some friends. Now, you might hear this and think, okay, This sounds like it's probably a good thing for a lot of people. I'm a high capacity person. I'm busy. Why do I need this? The American minister, John Tyson, has a really helpful line about the Sabbath. He says, in a broken world, we need to fill up on rest and beauty. In a broken world, we need to fill up on rest and beauty. I find that out works in a few different ways. Firstly, physical health. Your body needs a rest. Sabbath is not just complete inactivity, but healthy activity. So, for example, if your day job means sitting at a desk, you probably don't need to sit down all day on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is an opportunity to give your body what it needs. Did you know that in the one country in the world right now where Sabbath is widely observed, Israel, not surprisingly, mortality rates are lower on Sabbaths than any other day every single week of the year? A Sabbath might add a day to your life or even save it. It's relational health. Sabbath gives us time to focus on and develop life-giving friendships. I'm quite protective over seeing my family on the Sabbath, but I also like to see certain friends. It has to be people I find fun and life-giving, though. Could be spiritual health. Sabbath gives us time to focus on God in a different way. There is something about not working that implicitly acknowledges our finiteness. Stopping for a day each week reminds us that God does not need us, which is a great relief. It means we have to keep depending on him that the world will continue to turn, and I find that it does when I take a day off, surprisingly. Sabbath gives us perspective and humility. It's an act of worship to cease from work a day each week. Now, I hope all this sounds good, sounds attractive. The thing is, I find very few people Sabbath well. Why is that? What can we do about it? Now, what causes this? I think the first thing is real pressures. For some of us, it's genuinely tough to take a Sabbath each week due to our circumstances. If you're caring for other people, if your job makes it difficult for some reason, that's hard, and we should acknowledge that. But maybe, just maybe, it's worth asking for help or considering ways to restructure your life that would do you good. For some of us, we use real pressures as an excuse not to rest when actually we could. It's worth thinking about the fact that Jesus is the Saviour of the world, which is quite a responsible job, and yet he did Sabbath every single week. Could be laziness. Some of us are just a bit lazy. We have the time, but we use our Sabbath passively. We play a load of video games, or we watch three movies, or we dither, we stay up later than we should. We do things that are perfectly good in themselves, but we overdo them, and we stop them being restful. It could be a felt need to be productive. Some of us have really got a problem with rest. Maybe there's something that drives us to be productive and we feel like I've got to accomplish something all the time. And these people tend to be big achievers, so everybody likes them and they get lots of affirmation. But the cost is high. Unrestedness leads to anxiety and burnout. Very often the need to be productive comes from the same place as it did for the Pharisees. It's an inner need to prove ourselves, to perform. We might even trick ourselves into thinking that God appreciates it. But actually, it's an affront to him because he wants us to rest and trust him for our sense of worth at the deepest level. Could be fear of stopping. I think this is related, but I reckon more people than would like to admit it have a fear of stopping busyness. And they know, they agree in theory it's great to rest, but when you stop completely, you are left with your own thoughts. And our culture is built to prevent that happening. TVs are on all the time. You wear headphones when you walk down the street. You look at your phone before you go to sleep and as soon as you wake up. It's all a distraction to stop us being left alone with our thoughts, because as soon as that happens, there is a deep fear that we won't enjoy some of the thoughts that we have. Some of us don't want to face our loneliness or our regrets or our uncertainty. And so we fill the space with activity and noise, and we don't Sabbath, and we're poorer for it. And finally, the thing that might stop us is church life. Christians are pretty activists, generally speaking. We're always doing stuff. We have services on Sundays, we've got stuff in the week, we've got training events, we've got conferences, etc., etc. And a lot of it's really good, and you know, a lot of it's necessary, but sometimes church leaders, people like me, are unhelpful in that we want people to do more stuff, and give more time, and we don't take the rhythm of Sabbath and rest seriously. We should stop doing that. Absolutely, be committed to church. Turn up for stuff, but not at the expense of messing up rest. The rhythm God sets is 6 days a week of working hard and one day a week of resting hard. And so this whole Sabbath thing has the potential to get very personal, and it prods some of our deepest beliefs and fears and cultural assumptions. But before I hand back, last thing to note, remember this, take home this. The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Let me remake the point. We are not aiming towards Jesus. We are not following Jesus when we overwork. It's far more acceptable in our culture, at least among adults, to be someone that overworks than somebody who underworks, I think especially for Christians. But both of those things are bad. They're deadly. How can we make the changes in our rhythms that mean that we live in light of God's rhythm, that we do work hard, but we also, a day a week, rest hard? Because Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, it's not about a command, oh no, I've grudgingly got to do it. It's about being free to enjoy it. And God loves it when we do. So here's a little application point for the week, because people like it when you give a talk. I want an application. Here's an application point for this week. Find something restful and enjoy it. Do you think you can do that? Anybody? Yes, great. Because Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, he died and rose again so that you don't have to perform anything to have any place with God, any worth with God whatsoever. It's done. So relax.